Hey, welcome to Siren Radio. You're listening to Word Perfect, and my name is Steve Court, and we're going to have a chat this afternoon to one of the incredible writers who's come through Inspired.com. And this week we are joined by Maureen Ahmed. So welcome to the show, Maureen.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Fantastic. So yeah, we're going to talk to Maureen a little bit about her journey as a writer, and also about her book or recent release, The Blue Red Lyre, which is available on Amazon now and has been out for a couple of months. So for those people sitting at home, Maureen, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Maureen Ahmed. I was born in Bangladesh, Dhaka, and I was raised over there as well. Then from there, we went to Canada. We lived there for about 5 or 6 years, and then we migrated to Australia. At the moment, I live in Brisbane, in Australia, which is in the state of Queensland. So that's where I am at the moment.
Fantastic. So a jet set lifestyle then?
Yes, sort of. You did say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, three of the world's continents covered, that's more than most people will do in a lifetime, isn't it? So that's pretty impressive.
I've probably lived more years abroad than I've lived in my own country. So, you know, that way it is kind of a, you know, traveling all the time, sort of a lifestyle.
And what would you say are the main differences then between life in Canada and, say, life in Australia now?
Well, weather is a main difference. It's very, very cold, where we used to live, unlike Australia. And Queensland is known as the sunshine state, because there's just too much sunshine in the state, and the sun is very bright and it's very, very hot. You know, you could almost poach an egg outside on the rocks if you wanted to. It gets so hot in summer. So that is a very big difference between the two countries. And apart from that, you know, people are people, you know, they're more or less the same everywhere. But, you know, I would say that, you know, weather is a very big difference. Yeah.
Huge difference. And how have you found that's impacted on your sort of journey as a writer?
I used to write in Canada as well. My first piece came out in a campus newspaper called The Sheaf. It's a very old newspaper. And I wrote that on how I felt on my first winter and my first experience of the snow over there, because I have not seen any snow, you know, when I was back in Bangladesh. So, you know, that was my first experience with the snow. So I wrote that piece. It's called Winter's Tale. And after that, I also wrote a few journalistic write-ups for that newspaper. So, but, you know, when I moved to Australia, I decided to write a novella. And it was inspired by my friend, my debut, which was Jacaranda Blues. I have said this. I have mentioned Jacaranda Blues in many other interviews as well. So Jacaranda Blues is based on my friend who used to be my neighbor as well. She wanted me to write something about her life. And at that time, I didn't think I was ready to write, because I just didn't think that I had the flair, because my last degree was in linguistics, and I was too much into Chomsky and second language acquisition and language acquisition device and all that. So I didn't think I had the flair to write creative writing at all. But then a few years later, my friend passed away, and that moved me quite a bit. And then I decided that maybe I should do my friend justice and, you know, write something about her life after all that she wanted me to write. So that is what encouraged me to write Jacaranda Blues. But I also felt sad that my friend had passed away, and, you know, she didn't live long enough to read the book that I had written so diligently about her life. And, you know, try to make it perfect almost. Because I wrote Jacaranda Blues in 3 editions. And the last edition, known as Retitled as Offing, you know, came out in the Blue Red Lyre, the book that you, you know, published. So, you know, that was a twin novella book. So the first was The Offing, you know, which was based on her. And, you know, that was the last edition I was ever going to write, because I tried to perfect the story in that, in the last edition. Yeah.
Incredible. So, I mean, that starts from quite a raw emotional place then your sort of writing, if it's coming from, you know, the passion of a friend. So what sort of things inspire you now to pick up the pen? What's making you drive to carry on writing at the moment?
Well, nothing in particular really inspires me as such. Like, you know, I can get inspiration from many places. I can get inspiration from nature, for instance. If I see something I really like the rainfall or, you know, the trembling of a grass or flowers or whatever, you know, the seasons, the passing of seasons. If I'm inspired by all that, then I'll probably sit down and write something. But I have come to realize that rain inspires me quite a bit. I really love rain. I know you live in England and you see rain quite a bit over there.
Yeah, I would imagine our relationship with rain is slightly different. Yeah. I imagine it has a magical, special, rare quality to yourself.
Yes, and I have also visited London twice, so I know how the rain is there. But I mean, believe it or not, but I am really, I'm really fond of rain. And so, but also apart from nature, I think other things also inspire me, such as the human condition in general, and the you know, the state of the state of things that, you know, we are at the moment, like, you know, the political state, the social state, and I mean, life in general can also inspire me sometimes.
See, I definitely see some of that coming out in the way that you write. And I think the one that definitely I would pin as one of the things I highlight within your writing is about a sense of self. So when you see a lot of the way that you write about characters, it seems less about their relationship with other people and more about how they see their relationship with things around them. So it's a far more sort of intrinsic looking thing.
Yes. Yes. I'm not an extroverted writer. I write in stream of consciousness, which is, I spend a lot of time in my own mind and in the minds of the character. So it is sort of an introversion. It is sort of an introverted journey into the character's minds, rather than their relationship with society in general or with other characters. I have written short stories where the characters interact with other characters as well, but it is mostly a journey inside of themselves. So it is not an sort of introverted sort of an experience.
Yeah, characters. Absolutely. And I'm not saying that you don't have other characters and that they interact, because that's definitely there within the stories that I've read. But I think the way that you're able to express the way that those characters feel and their sort of their thought process in terms of their relationship with other people is where I think your strengths definitely lie. So you talked a little bit there before about starting out in language acquisition. So was that in terms of learning other languages?
Yeah, well, it is a subject. Like, you know, I did an MA in applied linguistics, and in applied linguistics teaches the acquisition of a second language, how a second language is learned. And English is my second language, but I learned it like my first language in Bangladesh for some reason, because my English teacher was from, Sister Joseph Mary, you know, she was from the United States, and she taught me a lot about literature and language. So I don't see it as, although it is my second language, but I have not learned it as a second language. Like, I have never been to a TESOL class or anything like that. But still, I wanted to know how second language can be acquired. And there are whole lots of, you know, research and theories and this and that, and about how a second language can be acquired, how a second language can be learned. But at the end of the day, I think it's the individual's interaction with the language. Like, there are bright second language learners. There are brilliant second language learners, you know, who are bilinguals, who learn a second language, like, you know, so good that it's even better than the first language. So there are people like that. There are students like that. So it really depends on the learner, you know, how well they encapsulate, how well they can understand the language, how well they can interact with the language.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've tried learning a second language probably two or three times in my life, and I've realized I'm probably best just trying to concentrate on perfecting the one I've already got, because I find it so hard to, it's the grammatical part. So I've looked at things like French and German and Spanish and things like that, and it's the fact that that it's not a direct translation. That's the bit that throws me, when I can't just translate word for word.
No,
what it is I want to say. That's where my mind just refuses outright to learn another language. But I think there's a big, I did some bits with people. I used to work for a recruitment agency quite a few years ago, and they had lots of Eastern European staff that would come over and work in the UK. So lots of Polish and Lithuanians and Latvians and people like that. And the speed at which some of those people would arrive in England with no English whatsoever, and just by going to work and being immersed in the language, the speed at which they would be proficient was incredible.
Well, language immersion is another thing. It's also called linguistic immersion. Like, you know, if you live in that country and you immerse yourself in the environment, in the linguistic environment of that country, then you learn it better. You can learn it like the native speaker. But learning like the native speaker does not guarantee that it is going to be grammatical, because native speakers don't speak it grammatically at all.
Absolutely, and,
as a second language learner, if you have learned it in a TESOL class, then you know, probably your second language will be more grammatical than native speakers.
For slightly older people in the UK who are football fans, there is the perfect example of what Maureen was just saying there. In the 1990s, there was a footballer who played for Liverpool called Jan Molby, and he was, I think he was Norwegian. So he had a real thick Norwegian accent, but he learned his English in Liverpool. So he ended up with a sort of a Scouse accent. So he spoke English like a Scouser would do, only... he was Norwegian with a Norwegian accent, and it was just my favorite thing when they used to interview him after football games, just hearing him speak was amazing. That immersion thing, you don't necessarily learn to speak the language properly. You learn to speak it like the people you're listening to.
You're listening to, and they're often not grammatical.
That's absolutely. You get all the slang and all the regional variances and things like that. Yeah. So, which you must have experienced loads of that then. If you've lived in, obviously, from moving from Bangladesh to Canada and then Canada out to Australia, you must have heard a wealth of different people.
Yes, well, the accent is quite different, and Australians use diction that the Canadians don't sometimes. Well, it's still standard English. I mean, standard English, you know, across the board is standard everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, there are some dialectical differences. some diction and some expressions and all the way they speak the language sometimes, you know, and the pronunciation, like hose, house is hose over there. So it is but over here, you know, they will say I might, like mate is might, more like non-standard variation, of course, that I'm talking about, but you know, standard English, like I said, it's standard everywhere, but variation of the language can differ quite a bit.
Now, obviously, I've only read your work in English. Do you write in your other language as well?
In Bengali. In Bangla, I don't write, because I have studied English literature, although my Bangla is very, very good. And I could write at any time if I wanted to, but I live in an English-speaking country, and I have been living in an English-speaking country for a very long time, more years than I have lived in my own country. So somehow I think I have lost a bit of confidence, because Bangla is a very difficult language, and because it's my first language, you know, I take it for granted, and I think that, you know, whatever I write is going to come not perfect, but I'm sure if I sent it to an expert, you know, they'd find 101 faults with the language. I'm a bit skeptical, if I may say, I'm a bit skeptical about.
Which is really interesting to hear, you know, when you think that was your, you know, your mother tongue,
your first language,
and then actually you're more comfortable in your second language than you are in your first now.
Yeah, for some reason, because I've studied English more, and because I have lived in English countries more years, and my friends are mostly they mostly speak English, and I also read English books quite a bit, So because of my literature background in English, that's why. So because of all those reasons, it just never happened writing in Bangla. Just maybe one day I will write. One
Yeah,
day. And
definitely.
immersion is also the other thing, you see, cultural immersion, because I'm immersed in this country. If I were immersed in my own country, in my own culture, although one do tend to carry the culture along, but still immersion has a big contribution, I
Absolutely.
think, in
yeah.
Practicing and writing. Yeah.
So in a moment, I was going to ask you to give us a little reading. And I think the reading that you're going to do is from the Blue Red Lyrates, the Cheshire Grins, an extract
yes.
from that. So obviously, we're only going to hear a snippet of the story itself. So just for those people at home, do you want to give us some context about what that story is all about?
Yeah, well, Cheshire Grins is about this cat who the character thinks is lost. But the cat is never there. It's all in her mind. So she thinks that, you know, she has lost her cat, and she goes around in her mind looking for the cat, and she travels. She travels distances, like, you know, she travels all over the world, even out of space, you know, looking for the cat. So at the end of the day, it is more about time looping, that no matter how far she goes, no matter how much she travels in her mind, she's always looping in time, and she's always coming around to the place that she is looking for her cat.
Incredible.
But in the end, even she realizes that, you know, there is no cat. It is all about time, and it is about creation, maybe. It is about how elusive our life is, and the illusion itself, that, you know, life is an illusion in the end. So that illusion is predominant, and that illusion is expressed through the cat that she thinks she had and that she thinks she has lost.
I'm so glad I asked you to do that, because that was a way better description of the story than I think I would have been able to do. That's great. So we're going to now hear Maureen read a small extract from The Cheshire Grins. Now, The Cheshire Grins, I say, is from the book The Blue Red Lyrae, which is available on Amazon. And if you need more information, you can go to impspired.com to find it. But for now, this is an extract from Cheshire Grins by Maureen Ahmed.
But no, this summer storm was akin to that train ride, the whiteness outside the shinning rain, like a shinned bone, climbed down. Only her own climbed up the shin bone, which caged her soul. The free spirit into this body of an encapsulated time. Time was upon her, time was upon everyone. However, King George's disappearance only meant a lonelier life for her, and a love she would have to contend with. She was feeling already lonesome. Her lonesome life would have become loathsome to her without King George's presence in it. As an orphan, she remembered those darkest hours in the orphanage dungeons with the scrap of measly bread she shared with the mouse she had befriended. What was a crime? That a hungry child stole a potato from the orphanage larder, and that she had lied about it? She didn't miss any of it. Those terrible days were bleak, as they were bleak now, that King George had gone missing on a bleak morning like this. But she had no choice. She had to do something about it. Her own feelings crushed her like the waves down there on the sandy beach. Everything came to pass one day, except for the sand. Time stood at its edge. Sands never changed its color, size, or shape. Every granule of it was exactly the same from the beginning of time. Time had failed. It had failed miserably when it came to sand. But her own life had changed, and it had changed for the better since her orphanage days.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Maureen. That was great to hear. And like I say, if you are interested in hearing some more of Cheshire Grins and you want to get hold of that book, you can go to either Amazon and search for Maureen Ahmed, The Blue Red Lyrae, and you will be able to find the book and order yourself a copy from there, no matter where you are in the world. Or if you're struggling to find that on there, if you go to impspired.com, go through our author section, again, you'll find the book listed on there, and it'll have all the relevant links that you need to go and get yourself a copy. It's available both as a paperback and as an ebook, so you can get that in whichever format suits yourself. Tell us a little bit more, Maureen, about the Blue Red Lyre, because it's not just that one story, is it? It's a whole novella.
It is a twin novella book. The first one is called Offing, and that is actually the fourth edition of my debut Jacaranda Blues. When I wrote Jacaranda Blues for the first time, that was a very, very short novella. That was about 18,000 words. But I didn't think that was done properly. And also the, you know, publisher had folded for some reason. You know, they just couldn't continue anymore. Then I decided to write a second edition and publish it again. And I did publish it again, but still I was not happy with it. Then I decided to write a third edition. I just wanted that book to be perfect for my friend's sake, because I loved her so much. And I didn't realize how much I loved her until she actually passed away. Mm. So I just kept making it perfect. You know, I just kept writing one edition after another to make it perfect, to make the perfect character. Although, you know, it is a fiction at the end of the day, and I have fictionalized it quite a bit. But my friend is still very much there as a central character. So in the end, in the fourth edition, which I think there won't be another edition after this. So, you know, this is the last edition that was included in the Blue Red Lyre under the name of Offing. So this is the last edition. I'm not going to get bogged down with this. And
no more rewrites on that one.
No more of Jacaranda Blues on the Offing. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, it brings us to the point in the show where we're going to take our first musical break, Maureen. And as always, we ask our guests to select the tracks. So this track is not necessarily, I think, the track that you would have chosen, but it's from a band that obviously has that connection to you. So what was it that made you choose, the band is going to be the Beatles, but what is it that made you choose the Beatles?
At one time, I was really fond of George Harrison. Because after Bangladesh was independent, George Harrison sang this very beautiful song, you know, Bangladesh, oh Bangladesh, and the story of I can't remember the lyrics at the moment, but you know, it was such a powerful song that has stayed with me, and I knew Beatles through that song, but then I also liked their other songs as well. And I like their values, their ideals, what they stand for. They stand for peace and love and that sort of thing. And I'm all for peace and love as well. So they represent my value.
Fantastic. Now, that's a great introduction. So we're going to listen now to Lady Madonna by the Beatles.
Sunday morning green.
Okay, welcome back to Word Perfect. You're listening to Steve Court, and we're joined today by Maureen Ahmed, all the way from Brisbane via Canada, originally from Bangladesh. So we've got a jet set writer with us today in the studio, talking to us all about their journey. So before the break there, we were talking to her about a little bit about the Blue Red Lyre. We heard an extract from the story, which is her latest book that has been released via Inspired, and is available on Amazon. And available from Inspired if you go via the website to get yourself a copy as well. And what I want to talk to you, Maureen, now about is your current process and a little bit more of sort of the modern history of you. So, because you've been quite widely published already, haven't you?
Yes, I have published quite a bit. I have published about 5 books, and I have published in various anthologies and flash fiction and microfiction, and I have published extensively. Even though I say so myself, but at the moment I'm writing a very, very laborious book, I think I should say, because I have been writing this for a very long time and I still see no end. I don't know when this, how this book is going to end and when. So this is a book set in Dhaka in 1960s in Bangladesh, which is when I was also growing up. So this book is about a family in Dhaka. It is about foreign aristocracy and all that. So there's a bit of history in there as well. So that's what I'm writing at the moment. And I have got up to about 80,000 words, but it's still not ending.
And do you know where you want it to go? Or is it just one of these continually evolving things?
Yeah, well, I'm a spontaneous writer. I don't predict anything. So it just... my pen tells me, you know, where to go. A pen just takes me, and I go where my pen takes me. So I don't know how this will end because I haven't seen the end of the story yet. I have seen so far that I've written, and none of that was preconceived or none of that was pre-planned. I'm a very spontaneous person, so I write spontaneously as well. And so, yeah, that's the state it is at the moment.
And is that controlled by the way that you write, or is that just a preferred style, or you know, what makes you write in that particular way?
I think it's my preferred style. That is how I feel comfortable writing. Because when I was doing my academic stuff, you know, I used to often go through really... that was a more controlled condition sort of for writing, because I was writing for an assignment or even my thesis, you know, so I had to condition myself. But with creative writing, I have more freedom and I've allowed myself to actually float in that freedom, you know, so that I can write freely and I don't have to feel restricted in any way. I don't have to feel controlled or conditioned or anything. So in a controlled environment, you write in a particular way. But when you're writing creative writing, or you know what I'm writing at the moment, this is like I have more freedom, so I can let myself go.
So creatively, so you've let yourself go. Do you have a strict routine to when you write or where you write, or is everything about what you do completely free?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say completely free, because there has to be a certain rigor in any kind of writing, whether it's creative or non-creative or academic or whatever. But yeah, I do have specific time. I write in the afternoons most of the time, you know, about 2 or 3 hours, and you know, that will be it for the day. But I'm more encouraged to write, or I feel like writing more when the weather is conducive to my taste, like, you know, when there's a bit of rain and cloud and, you know, the things that I like so much about the weather, you know, that's when I feel this nagging pain in my tummy, you know, which tells me, come on, do it, go, your pen is calling you.
So you're inspired to write when it's cold and rainy, and you've chosen to live in the sunshine state of Australia.
It does storm quite a bit here as well. Last week it just rained consistently for 5 or 6 days, and you know there was flood and flash floods and all that. So
is that when you wrote the 80,000 words then?
Yes. So I mean, do not underestimate the rain in this country.
Amazing. Brilliant. So you've got a longer term plan then in terms of getting this book finished. But you write quite a lot of flash fiction and short stories as well, don't you? So are they also coming alongside this novel?
Alongside, absolutely. I have written the Blue Red Lyrie while I was still writing this. I have written Grass Bleed, my collection of flash and microfiction, while I was writing this. But then, you know, Grass Bleed is a collection of already published micros and flash fiction everywhere in the world. I just wanted to collect it in one book so that it would all stay in one book.
Yeah.
So while my other book is still going, and I'm actually finishing up editing a collection of short stories as well for Bridge House UK, that too is going to be published in the UK. Gil James is the editor. So I am on to the third editing stage for that. So that is an in-house editing that they're doing. I have an editor for that.
Amazing.
So I'm doing some, I'll have to send it back, which will be on the fourth edits, I think, for that collection of short stories. So after that, I'll be all free to write this book that I've been writing for many years now. And I hope someday I will see the end of it.
Incredible. I mean, in terms of online publishing stuff, not necessarily in terms of the print books that you've done, you've been published all over the world in loads of different places, haven't you now?
Not all over the world, I would say, but widely, yes. Yeah. I've published in UK, in the USA, in India, in Australia. Yeah, those are the four major countries.
That's pretty world covering when I look at my map. But no, and how do you go about selecting a journal? So if someone's sitting at home now and they've got sort of short stories or flash fiction pieces that they want to try and share, what do you do when you're looking for somewhere to submit to?
Yeah, the problem is I don't write themed writing. So I just write whatever I feel like writing. And like I said, it's often, you know, spontaneous expression of my creativity. So those journals who are asking for themed writing, I usually try to avoid that. That's why I like Inspired so much. I like your journal so much because you never ask for anything themed. And I've just poured myself into my creativity in my writings that you have published. So I go for those journals, you know, which are not into themed.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think definitely looking at the content is very, very important. And how do you go about actually finding, so places like Inspired, how would you go about actually identifying that they even exist in the first place?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Facebook is a place where I find a lot of journals because my friends, you know, when they publish something, they often post it on Facebook. So that's one place where I find a lot of journals there. And otherwise, I'll just type in journals or literary magazines and Google under literary magazines, and I'll see a number of journals there. And if I like them, if I see that, you know, they might, there's a chance that, you know, I might get an acceptance, then I often send my stuff out to them. But Facebook, Twitter. Yeah, Twitter is a good place actually to find journals.
Yes, I think Twitter is definitely growing on the writers' platform things now. Lots of the writers seem to have Twitter accounts and things like that. And I think if you're sitting at home, because the idea of writing quite often comes across as being a very lonely process, but actually the writers I see having the most success at the moment are the ones who are connecting to other writers, have friends who are writers or have joined these writers' platforms on Facebook. And I think that is a great place to get some exposure or to see that the person who you know writes in a similar style to you has just been accepted here, there, or somewhere else. It probably means they might be interested in your work as well. So it's a good way to kind of gauge new opportunities for yourself, definitely.
Yeah. It is a lonely journey. I mean, writing is a lonely, lonely journey, but then you have to resurface, I guess, once in a while to connect to the world, because after all, it is life you're writing about. It is life and, general human condition and society and, you know, all of that we are writing about at the end of the day. Although it is introspective, like my writing is extremely introspective. But even in introspection, there has to be some link to reality in which reality may be enhanced, transformed, or transcended. So the writers must connect sometimes.
Yes, definitely. I think it's a benefit to people, isn't it? Shared experiences and just to widen your perspective and understanding of the world allows the characters that you write to have that wider, expanded understanding of what's going on as well. And I think it can only benefit you as a writer to experience more and to know more. I forget who it was, but there's one writer who said, "I crave the dark and depressing things of life because for me it's all just material." So it's like he wanted to experience those horrible things so he could write about it better.
Well, I haven't come across anyone except perhaps, I don't know, like, you know, most writers are attracted to the dark and the beautiful or the dreariness of life. But there are some writers who write about cheerful things as well. I mean, Jane Austen, for instance, you know, she wrote about society and gossips and marriage and love, and that's quite nice. You know, comparing her to Charlotte Bronte, for instance, Jane Eyre, for instance.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely.
Jane Eyre is dark and dreary a bit.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we find a balance between the two. Again, which is what I quite enjoy about the position I'm at with Inspired, is that I do get sent a lot of life is hard, life is difficult, woe is me kind of poetry, which some of it is just incredibly beautiful and captures that moment and that idea of grief and loss and pain and things so well. But it's nice to be able to then have a balance on that and to find those people that are able to see the beauty in the natural world or to find love and to find those things and to have that balance in there.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. Maureen, it brings us sadly towards the end of today's show. So we're gonna play out with a song in a moment. But before we go, I just want to say thank you very much for giving us your time, for sharing some of your work with us and doing that. If you're sitting at home and you want to find out more about Maureen Ahmed, you can go to inspired.com, search for her name on there, and you'll find some examples of her past work. You'll also find links through to the book that has fairly recently been released via Inspired, which is The Blue Red Lyre. And where else could people find you, Maureen, if they wanted to find more information about you?
Amazon, Goodreads, Facebook, Twitter, those are the places, even LinkedIn. Yeah, those are the places. I don't go much on Instagram or anything. I have nothing to share on Instagram, you know, actually. So I don't go there much. But I am, if they want to be my friend on Goodreads or if they want to be my friend on Facebook, they can always send me a friend request there.
Fantastic. So yeah, if you want to get in touch with Maureen, obviously there's lots of routes that you can do that. If you're sitting at home and you're a writer yourself and you're looking to try and find some advice or to try and find that next place to go, then again, if you go to inspired.com, go to the contact section, you can get in touch with myself and I will help to point you in the right direction of something in your part of the world that will hopefully lead you to that next step in your writing process. But that does bring us to the end of today. So we're going to play out with our final track. So I'm going to hand back over to you, Maureen, to introduce our final song of the day.
Yes, that would be Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah. The bridge over, what was?
Bridge over Troubled Water.
Yeah. The Bridge over Troubled Water.
A beautiful song. So here we are. Thank you very much. Tune in to us again next week for another conversation with one of the many, many incredible writers that comes through inspired.com. You've been listening to Sign Radio. This is Word Perfect. Have a good week. Get right and friends.
when you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part. Oh, when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Sail on, silver girl, sail on.